keep waiting and waiting, and finally something happens, and this young lady, who's part of her productive life, had been destroyed behind bars. But today, this lady is free. You know, it was such a thrilling moment. And then we were like, what do we do next? How do we publicize this case to let other people know that there are people like that? Not just even the women, but also the men who will be on death row, who were there because of some injustice, you know? And she could finally come out. And even the prison officers at the time were like, really? Somebody's actually free, not through a presidential pardon, but actually using the court system.
Welcome. You're listening to the inaugural series of the Women Beyond Walls podcast. I'm your host, lawyer and activist Sabrina Mattani, and on this podcast, I have the privilege of being joined by some incredible individuals. Women with lived experience of the justice system, feminist lawyers, activists, and experts, all committed to seeing an end to the over-incarceration and over-criminalization of women worldwide. Stand up. We've got to stand up. On this episode, I am joined in conversation with a woman who is both a professional inspiration and a friend. On a very wet day in Freetown, Sierra Leone, Samiti Lavalle and I discussed the death penalty, what life is like for women behind bars in Sierra Leone, and why it is important that the feminist movement is inclusive of all women. An award-winning human rights lawyer and former executive director of Advocade, an organization that provides free legal services for women in contact with the law, Samiti is also currently a commissioner on the National Human Rights Commission. This was a very special conversation for me, as I co-founded Advocade and spent many years working alongside Samiti and the courageous Advocade team in Sierra Leone, a country that is now my third home. Samiti, thank you so much for joining me in Freetown, Sierra Leone at the Freetown Media Centre. It's wonderful to have you on the podcast.
Thank you, Sabrina.
So let's start, Samiti, by telling us what made you decide to become a lawyer.
I actually started off being a science student in school. But in my secondary school, the latter part, I traveled from Sierra Leone to the United Kingdom. And I decided that because of what I'd seen in Sierra Leone and the issues that women and girls face, that it would make more sense to be a lawyer. So I thought that by becoming a lawyer, I would have a voice that could be able to speak out for women and girls so that the inequality that I was seeing in Sierra Leone, I'll be able to do something about it.
I asked Samiti what were the main drivers behind women's imprisonment in Sierra Leone.
So it's a whole cyclical crisis that we're going through where poverty is at the helm of everything and affects women's incarceration. And so it was really sad because you'd hear the stories about what had led to their incarceration. We found out a lot of them were poor. The majority were poor because you could not afford a lawyer. At the start, when Advocate started operating, that was the key determinant of how you'd end up either being convicted or spending a long time in prison, was you did not have access to a lawyer. So that was the need Advocate was trying to meet by providing them with access to a lawyer, so that at least their own case would be put across.
Thank you. So absolutely. I mean, paint a really, you know, dire picture of women being arrested without knowing kind of their legal rights and sometimes not being able to get access to legal representation. And it was, you know, really telling that you spoke about how poverty is a driving factor in women's imprisonment.
Well, the issue of poverty is there, was there, and will continue to be there as long as we continue to be a country with a low human development. And even though we're resource rich, but the resources are not spread around and people are not really able to tap into the resources. And as I alluded to when I was talking, the reason why you would get arrested or remain arrested, because you can be fairly affluent and get arrested, but because you can have access to a lawyer or to communicate at the police station and have people, influential people in society, to come to your aid, your term of imprisonment will be far different from somebody who's poor. So that's where poverty at every facet affects. It affects your ability to be able to escape injustice. It affects your ability to communicate with your lawyer.
In 2019, Advocate and the Vance Centre interviewed 86% of women in detention in Sierra Leone to better understand the causes and consequences of women's imprisonment. The research found that the majority of incarcerated women in Sierra Leone are in pre-trial detention, and that the criminalization of poverty is one of the leading causes of the over-incarceration of women. The research also uncovered that the majority of women in prison in Sierra Leone are survivors of sexual and gender-based violence. 48% survived at least one form of abuse during childhood, and 72% had suffered violence as adults at the hands of their partners. Half of the women in prison who were interviewed reported suffering from depression, and 40% from anxiety before entering prison. However, mental health hardly ever plays a role in court decisions.
So I'm really grateful that Advocate was able to carry out this study, because we had had anecdotal evidence before, but with this study of nearly all the women who were incarcerated during the period of the study, we could actually get vital statistics like you have just presented. So in the cases I had the privilege of representing during the time I was at Advocate, poverty was a major factor. And if you are not able to even have enough food to eat on a daily basis, there's no way you're going to have money to hire a lawyer.
Samiti then went on to explain how women were often arrested for minor issues, such as owing money. Many women work in the informal economy, such as market traders. When they are unable to pay back small loans, often due to emergency needs for their families, they can be reported to the police and arrested. Advocate usually tries to mediate these cases, but this is not always successful. For example, one woman, a market trader, owed her goods supplier the equivalent of $600 for merchandise taken on credit. When she could not pay the full amount on time, her supplier reported her to the police instead of giving her more time or pursuing other civil remedies. The woman was sentenced to 12 months imprisonment or a fine of $125. She was 7 months pregnant at the time and was forced to spend a week in prison. She was only released because her husband was able to raise the money to pay her fine. Samiti also found that in rural areas, access to justice could be even harder to access than in the cities like Freetown, with many women unable to afford one of the few lawyers who operate outside of the capital, and with legal aid organisations being severely underfunded. Samiti went on to outline some of the other reasons access to justice for women in contact with the law can be so difficult to attain in Sierra Leone.
We don't have the defences in some other countries have of diminished responsibility, where the actions of the other party, the deceased person, has culminated in the action now at that particular point in time of the accused. So we had to deal with some of those issues. And so whilst I was handling those cases, we were also, Advocate was also using advocacy and publicity to highlight them, because majority of cases in court are by men, are against men. So you find out that because the cases of women are in the minority, their issues do not stand out. So Advocate's role with the cases I was handling was to highlight those, to show that poverty was an issue, and more importantly, that violence was a main cause of the reason why the person ended up killing that person, which is not justification, but explains why they felt forced to carry out something they knew was not correct.
And you've worked on several cases of women who've been incarcerated, but can you tell me about a particular case that really impacted you?
Yes, so one of the cases that I've handled was the lady who at the time was the longest serving person on death row. She stayed on death row for 8 years. And her case was really sad because she felt she was not guilty. And with the evidence that was provided, it was so scanty. It was really a shame that she was actually arrested, detained, and then gone through the court system and found guilty. So I met her after she had spent, I think, about 2 years on death row. So the death penalty exists in Sierra Leone for cases for murder and armed robbery. But for women, until recently, it was only for really murder that they would be found on death row. And so with her own plight, it was how could she appeal? She had tried to appeal when she was convicted, but she didn't know how to go about it. Nobody was there to represent her. And so when we came up, we had the challenge of that the time for appeal had passed. But we just took up the challenge to say, you know what? If she never knew she had a right to appeal, something must be done. She could not just stay there. And to crown it all, she was a young woman. She was, we believe, in her late 20s. Again, because of poverty and illiteracy, we don't know her actual date of birth. But by looking at her, you could tell she was in her late 20s or so. She had children she had left behind. She was in a polygamous home situation. It was her stepchild. She was alleged to have killed a baby that she was alleged to have rolled over and killed. But she claimed the husband was also in the room when the thing happened and he put all the blame on her. So how do you appeal against something where it is 2 years overdue? So eventually we just, as I said, took the bull by the horns and said, let's go try, give it a shot. Her life is worth it. And so we appealed, asked for extension of time in the Court of Appeal. And they said, because of the nature of the offense and the gravity, that if she was not given the ability to appeal, she would stay there forever and would die, they would overturn what the law said about you only having to have 21 days. 21 days to save your neck. 21 days just to appeal against a sentence when you do not even have a private lawyer representing you at the time. There was no legal aid system in place. You're dependent on the state providing you with a lawyer who you only saw on the day of the trial. And afterwards, you never had any conference with him. So they felt with all those circumstances, they should allow her appeal to come forward. And thankfully, they did. And after several years, after the appeal was heard, after several years, we finally got a judgment. So we had been going to court back and forth to get a date. So on the day now, finally, the Court of Appeal, which is three judges sitting down to deliver a judgment. And then they said, today we're going to deliver a judgment. I was in court, heart pounding, and everybody's there. The accused person had given up hope that she would ever see the light of day about her case. So just to give you an idea of how the court was, and we've been waiting for some hours for the judges to come out. They finally came. The court clerk came. He knocked on the table and said, order. And then they sat, the judges processed in. And then the presiding judge proceeded to call the state versus and the accused person's name. And then he started reading, and then we were hearing now like all the things that were in support of what we were saying. And then straddling my heart is going down gradually, like, okay, so really we're getting there. This is sounding good. This is not sounding bad. And then we get to the end. And he said, and because of all these things above, we find the accused acquitted and discharged. And then we blew down, and we really didn't have the emotions at the time because, as I said, we're not expecting it. We couldn't even shout in court because we were just flabbergasted, like, oh my God, really? After 8 years, after all this battle, after all this time, after all the tears, after all the hard work, after all the pushing, that finally somebody who felt her life was over, who had thought of committing suicide, who had thought she would never see her children, because by the way, where she was convicted was over 200 miles away from where she was now being incarcerated. So she had never had a visit from the family members. So we were just like, I just stood up and said, my Lord, thank you. I think something along those lines. And then they gave whatever ancillary orders, like how the orders would be processed and sent so that she could be released. And then they left the courtroom, and then we started hugging each other. And then we were like making the phone calls to call back at advocate at office to say, really, finally today, this lady is free. It was such a thrilling moment. And then we were like, what do we do next? How do we publicize this case to let other people know that there are people like that? Not just even the women, but also the men who will be on death row, who were there because of some injustice, you know? And she could finally come out, and even the prison officers at the time were like, really? Somebody's actually free, not through a presidential pardon, but actually using the court system. So that still sticks in my mind.
What an incredible case, Samiti, and just to be involved in this case where you
you made such a huge difference in a woman's life. I mean, really a difference between, you know, life and death. And just the perseverance that you took all those years to keep supporting this woman is just really incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And your legal and advocacy work has actually resulted in the freeing of 6 women on death row, which is an incredible number. And how did meeting women on death row change your views about the death penalty?
Well, I've never really, I think, believed in a death penalty per se, because it just seems a bit a cruel way to end someone's life. But my work with the women on death row in Sierra Leone, as I said, women who some were miscarriage of justice, some were it was anger, some was domestic violence. And you think really penalizing them, even going through the system, is punishment enough? People think people on death row in Sierra Leone are these violent murderers. Let's get their stories heard, at least of the women that we're representing. Let them know who they are. Because once their stories are told, it changes their perspective. We found out that engagement was key to changing the perception. It hasn't changed the perception of everybody, but the key policy drivers, those who worked in the justice system and come across these people on a daily basis, the advocacy has changed their mindset.
Since I had this conversation with Simiti, in Sierra Leone, perceptions have changed further. Enough that on 23rd July 2021, the Parliament of Sierra Leone voted unanimously to abolish the death penalty. Simiti's work and the work of Advocade and other civil society organisations, such as Lawyers, CARL, ILRAJ, the Bar Association and the Death Penalty Project, were recognised by many as a driving force behind this change. I wanted to know what else Simiti thought needed to change about the way Sierra Leone treats women in contact with the law.
I think it is the perception they have about the kind of women that are going through conflicts with the law. But I think it's a gradual change. I think with the advocacy work Advocate is doing and other NGOs like Prison Watch and with the Legal Aid Board, there's been a change. And telling our stories, getting the ex-prisoners to be able to tell their stories, and for those who are working with them to tell their stories so that we can change. It's a gradual process. I mean, when I was working as an advocate in the late 2000s to now, there's a difference. You see people are more understanding. The feminist movement now tries to embrace them. Before, you would not really go and talk to the UN organizations and talk about like women's issues, women in prison, as being part of women's rights issues to look at. But now there's a tolerance. There's a thing that, oh, let's not forget women in conflict with the law. So there's been a change. And I think society needs to find out, how do we stop these women going in? How do we ensure that for minor offenses, there is diversion like they have for children? How can we stop them entering the system? How do we empower these women, proper empowerment that really enables them to have financial management, anger management? How do you handle your children? You know, because even in the family setting, if you are not brought up in a home, it's going to be difficult for you to control your home. Another issue we'd even mention was what happens to their children. The reason why women's incarceration has greater impact than with the men, if a man is incarcerated, yes, his family will suffer financially, but emotionally and caring for the caring, still the mother will be there to do that. But when women are removed from the home, the father also tends to leave the home. So the children are scattered in the street. You don't know what happens to them. So trying to stop that cycle of happening.
Advocate's research in 2019 found that 88% of women in prison in Sierra Leone had children outside of prison. 9% of these children were unaccounted for in the outside world. One woman told the Advocate researchers, "I have 5 children. I do not know anything about them, whether they are alive or not. This is very scary, and I always cry." Global research has shown that the experience of having a mother in prison not only negatively impacts a child's relationship with their mother, but it can affect all aspects of their lives, including their education, health, and well-being. Social stigma may also lead to social isolation and discrimination. Given the devastating impact of incarceration on women and their children, I wanted to know whether Simiti had received support from the wider feminist movement for her work.
At the start, It was difficult, not in the sense of like they were not willing to listen, but it was not a topic that was discussed. But I find now a lot of feminists, recently somebody told me like a feminist collective went to give donations at the correctional center. I know prominent female journalists who are doing work with women behind bars. So there's a whole change. So I think back then at the start, it was difficult, not a sexy topic, if I could use that word. But now people understand and people do look out.
And you're working with women who are often on the margins of society, women on death row, women who are sex workers. And have you ever received any backlash due to the work you do?
Oh, yes. I think it comes with the territory of being a lawyer and then obviously the kind of area of law. Because we are a defense lawyer, automatically the victim's family think you are against them and you are trying to make them the alleged perpetrator to evade justice. So just generally as a defense lawyer, you have attacks, people challenging you on the other side. But also because of the nature of the cases, murder cases, yes, there have been times, whether it's from, as I said, the other side or from the court officials, why are you representing this person? What's in it for you? And things like that. But the main problem I've had was in cases that were considered political, in the sense that you're representing people who, because of political reasons, they were detained. So we had a few cases during the Ebola time for those who were arrested from a certain district on the idea that they had Ebola. But everybody knew it was a political matter. And so when we intervened, there were threats of why are you assisting these people? Don't you know it's against the powers that be and things like that? I think even my family members were concerned. You are not doing this because of personal reasons, but you're doing a job to represent, and the constitution allows everybody a right to representation. So there have been times, yes, that I've been scared that something could happen to me. But thankfully, we're in a society where the police are there to provide protection. And no matter what, because of also social media, if something were to happen to somebody, there will be those who reach out in social media to say, this is the situation. And they will be able to rally around, whether if it's a donor community or civil society, to come out in defense or in support.
You're a very courageous woman, Smiti, and I know a lot of people listening to you speaking will be really inspired by your courage and your commitment as well. Working in prisons is obviously very challenging, but what gives you hope?
Well, I believe that it's changing. The conditions are improving there. And less women for minor offenses can be found there. I mean, but on the whole, there's been a change in how things are, and the prison conditions are getting a bit better, certainly for women because of advocates' work.
While things have been slowly improving in Sierra Leone, there have been some concerns that the COVID-19 pandemic might hinder progress. For example, Advocate documented how COVID regulations can put women and girls disproportionately at risk of contact with the law. Take Aisatu, a 14-year-old girl who was arrested during a three-day lockdown. Her family ran out of water and she was sent to the nearby community pump. On her way home, she was arrested by police and detained for violating lockdown restrictions. She was so scared that she had trouble speaking when she was arrested. One of Advocate's paralegals lived nearby and heard about her case. He intervened and she was released. Though there are many challenges, there is much to be inspired by. I asked Smiti how the work she does with incarcerated or formerly incarcerated women inspires her.
I've had the privilege of actually having some of them name their children after me. So that child is like a legacy of the days when I was representing their mothers. I don't know what story they would tell their child when they're of age to ask how they're named after this person. But it's inspiring to see somebody appreciate you. And that's a cultural thing in Africa. If somebody has inspired you or you has done something for you, you name their child after them. So it helps us to keep track, to remember that for those of us who have a semi-privileged background to be able to go to school, have parents who are supportive, so we can get a good education and give back. This is our own time of giving back. And these are products of our giving back to society.
It's great to know that there's lots of little Samitis across Sierra Leone, and I hope that they will grow to be as inspiring and courageous as the woman they're named after.
I hope so too.
I then asked Samiti to share some ways listeners can support the work she is doing.
Well, firstly, there's so much information out there. We need people to be involved. We need people to speak out. By even you raising your voice, bringing the issue out, even on your Facebook page or on your Twitter handle, all of those ways can put a spotlight on the work that Advocate is doing, on the work of prisons, so that people get engaged to know that prisons is not just for other people. One day, it might affect you, whether it's at the police station or going through the court system. So let's all try and make it a better place until the time happens that where you don't need any prisons. But for now, whilst they're there, let us make them places where there is no torture and where there is positive development in the lives of people.
Thank you so much, Smitty, for your time. It's been so inspiring and encouraging to hear about the really important work you're doing, not only with Advocate, but with the Human Rights Commission and on so many levels, trying to change the situation for women in prison, not only in Sierra Leone, but also globally. So thank you so much for your time, and we wish you all the best with all the work you continue to do.
Thank you so much, Sabrina. It was a pleasure having this conversation with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Women Beyond Walls. To find out more about the work of Advocate, about Samiti, or about other organisations working on death row cases or death row abolition, visit womenbeyondwalls.org for resources and more information. This episode is edited by Human Group Media, a podcast company for social change and impact. To learn more about their work, please visit humangroupmedia.com. On this episode, we are thankful for the assistance of Laura Cook as producer, Victoria Lynn as communications fellow, to Lady Unchained and Miri for the use of their song, which accompanies all podcast episodes in the series. If you love the song as much as we do, visit Unchained Poetry's website, a platform for artists with experience with the criminal justice system. We are also grateful to Barmy Boy and the Freetown Media Centre for assisting with the recording in Sierra Leone. If you enjoyed this episode of Women Beyond Walls, we encourage you to pass it on and share with friends. And if you have time, we would really appreciate your reviews on your podcast platform.